Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Fellow fiends, welcome to another terrifying and delectable episode of Nightmare on Film Street, the horror podcast with zero credibility, but all of the blood, ghouls, and gore your puny heart can handle. Let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street. I'm John.
I'm Kim. And this week, we are talking about Body Parts from 1991 and Rabid from 1977. Let me double check. 77.
Awesome. We've done zero research, and I am very excited to tell you everything I know about this movie.
I researched all through dinner, John, and that Wikipedia page was not very long.
It's safe to assume you're an expert. I instead went down like a Wikipedia hole of body horror movies, including one called The Iron Man, where somebody accidentally kills a guy who's in love with metal and slowly becomes metal himself and takes over Tokyo. It's weird.
It's the remake to I Know What You Did Last Summer, but instead of leaving people notes, he leaves them shards of phallic metal. Because all of these movies descend into something phallic. Don't you realize that? It's very weird.
All of the body horror movies?
All of them.
All of them.
All of
them. Even Body Parts?
Sure.
Okay, because I feel like I can poke a hole in your statement with this episode. Let's get into it.
We just started. Shouldn't we talk about, you know, like, why we decided upon these films? Perhaps because we went to a thrift store and Body Parts was $3 and we were like, yeah, we do.
Oh, yeah. We showed up at this little horror shop in a flea market. Did not know they had VHS tapes, but holy shit, when we saw them, we're taking them all home. I have such regrets, though. We walked away.
No, we didn't. Don't tell people, because if they get there before we get there,
oh,
it might be gone.
Okay, well, there's one that I really want that I didn't grab.
All the tapes were $3, which, yeah, you're like, $3 for VHS now. Some of them were worth way more than that, and some of them were worth less than that. But it all evened out. It was great. We bought a bunch.
That's going to be a new problem of mine, because with eBay, at the very least,
shipping. You get to shipping, you're like, fuck this.
Exactly, that's the problem, right? Honestly, sometimes, like, shipping's reasonable. I don't want to fucking wait. I want this now. I want an impulse purchase, and that's exactly what I'm going to get at that flea market. And I'm just going to say goodbye to all my money there.
It's a real reason why Canadians are good with money. It's because shipping here for anything is ridiculous. Oh, I would like to buy 12 more pins. Oh, shipping is $46 for a $10 pin. No, thank you. Fucking shipping. But we got Body Parts in our VHS haul.
Hell yeah, we did.
And we watched it the other night without any kind of intentions for doing it on the podcast. And I put it to Twitter and I was like, yo, pitch me your body horrors that will match with this body horror that I just watched and is fresh in my brain. And Twitter delivered. So thank you to those of you who recommended Rabid to pair with Body Parts, because it was a popular choice. It came up a few times, so we paired the two.
I still think Idle Hands would have been a good double feature. But in more ways than one, Rabid is like a parallel film.
Yeah, we needed something a little more classic and a little less humor. Body Parts, don't get me wrong, is a pretty funny movie, but I don't think intentionally, like Idle Hands is. We'll get to Idle Hands. Idle Hands will happen. So if you're like, no, Idle Hands, I want to hear them talk about it, it'll happen sooner or later. So if you haven't seen Body Parts, I highly recommend you do before you get into this podcast, because it is totally worth the watch. You follow a psychologist who gets in a car accident and receives a full arm transplant, only the arm he receives is that of a serial murderer and it's making him do bad things. Well, sort of.
Yeah.
And then shit happens. So that's that movie.
If you haven't seen it and you don't have the time or the resources, I'm sure you've seen Treehouse of Horror. This is exactly like Homer's evil toupee from Snake.
Yeah, that's the Cliff Notes, essentially.
Done. You know everything you need to know before getting into this movie.
And Rabid is one of David Cronenberg's earliest films. It is kind of the same movie. We follow a girl who gets in a motorcycle accident and gets a experimental skin graft, which causes her to have some sort of stinger.
Genetic mutation?
Some very phallic stinger.
Yeah, you're wrong.
In her armpit. And she goes on a murderous rampage. And that's basically that movie.
Oh, it's a real tragedy, yeah.
Rabid is currently on Shudder, so if you have Shudder, the streaming service, you can catch that real easy. Body parts, hopefully you're going to find a VHS at a thrift store in the middle of nowhere. Sorry.
I'm sure there's a $5 DVD on Amazon somewhere.
Yeah, probably. Check the Walmart bin.
It's got Jeff Fahey, guys. You will not regret that purchase.
I don't think Jeff Fahey is, like, the highlight of that movie.
Not really.
I don't know what the highlight of that movie is. Probably that final car scene. We'll get into it.
It's the greatest car chase, yeah.
But before we get into the films of this week, what's keeping you creepy this week, John?
Well, as you all know, they started filming Halloween recently in Charleston, South Carolina. And, you know, every neighborhood that they film a movie in is a neighborhood somebody lives in. And we are starting to see photos of the set decorations and the exteriors of some of the houses they're shooting on pop up on Facebook. We quickly put together an article. If you'd like to see some of those photos that are appearing on social media and get an idea of what Halloween's gonna look like, head over to nofspodcast.com and check out that article. But, you know, be warned, this is spoiler territory. You're gonna see what the sets look like.
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of really hamming the spoilers up in the tagging at the beginning of the post, just for people who don't want any spoilers and want the film to be entirely a surprise.
Absolutely, yeah.
We didn't post any of the more spoilery images that are on the internet right now, because I know there's a really, it's far distance shot of Nick Castle in the Mike Myers costume. And
yeah,
just based
that.
On what we've heard from people who actually live around the area is that they weren't permitting people to take photos of actors in costume and stuff, and so somebody kind of was able to capture that image but didn't necessarily have permission to, so we didn't post anything on the site that has people in costume. It's just building exteriors, Halloween decorations, stuff of the street. So I mean, if you want some teasers as to what it's going to look like, yeah, totally go check it out.
Yeah, some of the posts that I found photos on were, the people that posted them were explaining plot points, like what they were filming and what Michael Myers was doing.
I know, I was very unhappy. I was like, please don't tell me what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't want to know how action plays out in that movie. I don't want to know about anything at all other than, you know, maybe the occasional thing that you would see driving by. Like, we took photos of the Niebold house when they were filming it near us for It, but you could just walk up and look at it. It wasn't restricted. We didn't have to bribe anybody to let us get close. So it was kind of free to the public to a degree.
Yeah, and seeing some jack-o'-lanterns on a porch is going to get me pumped. I don't even...
Oh, yeah.
I say now that I'm probably not going to watch the trailer, but I'm probably going to because everybody's going to be talking about it when it lands. I typically don't watch trailers because I like to be completely surprised.
Do you want to do a handshake right now? We won't watch a single trailer?
We're like, going to have to write articles on it, John.
I don't have to watch the trailer to talk about how hype it's going to be. Like,
I feel like that synopsis better be long. We also had a bit of a movie marathon this weekend. We have been on a bit of a VHS kick. We finally got our VHS player back working, so we've been thrifting like crazy. And recently picked up Prom Night 2, Hello Mary Lou, and Prom Night 3. Wait, what is Prom?
I think it's called Last Kiss.
Last Kiss.
I don't know why.
It looks like a teen pulp novel, the cover of Last Kiss.
It looks great. Yeah. And honestly, not great.
Not great.
The entire movie, not great.
It had its moments. It was very stylized and fun. I especially like when she impaled the teacher with two ice cream cones.
I like that we went to this sort of other world that Mary Lou is inhabiting. It's a lot like the Further of the Prom Night universe. And it's brilliant because they use one of the lines from the sequel. It's not who takes you to prom, it's who you leave with.
Ooh,
she sucks him into really that other word. Oh, it's a great line. Yeah, it's weird that this is a direct sequel to the second one, but the first one
is completely different than any of.
Yeah,
completely disassociated. Not anything to do with Mary Lou, with 50s prom.
It's, not at all.
No,
and I'll say right
now,
little
Canadian indie film, and
I think it's better than the first one.
Hello, Mary Lou.
Yeah,
I It's funner. It is more fun than the first one, I will agree.
Doesn't beat that dance number with Jamie Lee Curtis at the end of
Oh my God,
Night, right?
I fucking love that.
She's like a fucking disco queen.
Fever.
It's just a bad slasher, but it's perfect.
It's just a perfect bad slasher.
It's Canucksploitation at its best.
That's great. Canucksploitation.
Other than that, I want to give a big shout out to our most recent patron, Isabel. Thank you so much for your monthly pledge. Isabel, I don't really have any plans of murdering 1,000 people and going to jail for the rest of my life, but if I do, and of course, you are in a horrific car accident and in need of life-saving limb surgery, you could totally have my arm. Just know that it's haunted with my memories, and occasionally you will see it reach toward a bowl of chips or a bag of candy, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's going in your mouth. Like, it's just that hand, all it does is snack, and it's got a lust for salty treats.
Your version of the Idle Hand movie is just binge eating.
Oh, yeah, and there's nothing you can do about it. You're doomed to that fate. Thank you again for your pledge. This show would be a lot harder to do without your support. I miss my tagline. You've taken it away from me and I can't have it
you
back.
You can say it.
The show would be a nightmare without you, Isabel.
And before we send you to the rest of the episode, we do have a bit of an announcement this week. We are changing up our format. So we will now be releasing episodes every other Thursday rather than every Thursday. And I can hear you guys groaning from there.
Yeah. This was a really hard decision to make. I love doing this podcast. I love seeing your reactions on social media and hearing that you actually enjoy listening to us and the nonsense that we put out constantly. But it takes up a large portion of our lives.
That sounds so bad.
I know. You know, 2017 was a really big year for us. We have a lot planned for 2018, and I'm sorry if I'm being a little vague right now, but it's going to require a lot more of our time and attention to expand Nightmare on Film Street to what we want it to be.
Yeah, this isn't about stepping back from the podcast at all. We're trying to free up some of our time to focus on the bigger projects that we have planned. We want to keep doing Nightmare, and we want Nightmare to be an entity of its own. And right now, we're growing without the resources to do that. And the biggest resource we have for Nightmare is time. It's just John and I and our team of volunteers and you guys helping us spreading the word on social media and through your friends and anybody you know that loves horror. So we're going to keep on making content on the website, on social media, the podcast, and we're going to do it better. The podcast may be only every other week, but we're going to be putting out more Patreon episodes. We're going to be doing the drive home from the drive-ins exclusively for our Patreon supporters to thank you guys for supporting us.
We're still going to do little top of the show reviews of movies that are in the theater, so you won't be without them. You'll get our impressions, but if you want a full, you know, hour talk about what we thought of the movie, you can find them on Patreon. We don't want this podcast to be something that we rush. We want to be able to take the time to make sure every episode is the best episode that we could put out.
Yeah, and like us, fun and not rehearsed and conversational, and we go on tangents and we talk about silly stuff, and we're at a point now where we're so busy making sure the website has content and social media has content and the podcast is ready to go that there is literally no time for anything else. And 2018 is going to be a big year for us. We're going to be going to conventions and festivals just like last year, and we have a whole lot to do regards to that.
And we're still rocking day jobs. And as much as this is something that we've been holding off doing for as long as we possibly can, I am looking forward to it because I know that it means that you will have better content every other week than if we were just to put out an episode that we really rushed to get out to you every Thursday.
Yeah, so the next episode will be the following Thursday.
And we will be giving you the movies in advance that we're going to be talking about, which will give you time to seek them out and watch them yourselves before the show, so you can better understand.
We'll all be on the same page.
Yeah, we'll all be on the same page at this point, finally, right?
But when you tune in from 2 weeks from now on the next episode of Nightmare on Film Street, we are going to be talking about Reanimator and Death Becomes Her.
This was a match made in the afterlife.
It was completely accidental, too. So,
right?
Perfect pairing on our part, it was the wine and cheese of horror movies.
Oh, yeah, absolutely one of my favorite 80s movies.
And one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
So it's going to be good, and it's a perfect movie marathon pairing if you have a night free to watch both. Mm-hmm. They go so well together, surprisingly.
It's such a weird fit. Death Becomes Her was just released recently on Blu-ray through Scream Factory, and Arrow has an incredible 4K restoration of Reanimator that you absolutely have to pick up. It's got an additional integral cut of the film that, I'm going to tell you right now, you don't necessarily need to watch, but is very interesting, and comes with a full graphic novel adaptation of the entire movie.
But enough of our news. Let's get into this week's episode.
So, Body Parts from 1992.
One.
Damn. Body Parts, take two, from...
No, we're keeping the first one.
Bill, there's nothing to worry about. Everything's going to be just fine. You lost your arm in a car accident yesterday. We've transplanted another arm for you.
You put a killer's arm onto my body and you didn't tell me.
That arm can't do anything you don't want it to.
How do you know that? Where does evil live? Does it live in the soul? In the mind? Maybe it lives in the flesh.
Maybe you got some kind of demon inside of you these days.
Why doesn't anybody want to ask any questions about these operations? I hit my kid. I tried to strangle my wife. I have nightmares every night. I want this arm off!
Currently sitting at a 5.5 out of 10 on IMDb, a 40% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 2.8 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
The D.
With the D.
Yeah, it still screws me up. You know, I'm just glad there's enough people to create, like, an aggregated rating. You ever go to a movie that you're like, oh, this movie's great, I wonder what everybody else thought of it, and you realize no one's seen it?
I had that problem actually researching the source material for this movie, because it's based on a book from 1965 called Choice Cuts.
Choice Cuts, that's right.
Which is an amazing title. Kind of like it more than Body Parts, but...
It sounds like a different movie. I wasn't excited because I've read it. I just remember seeing it in the credits.
The book was originally published in French, and I couldn't find a lot of information on it and its plot. So I don't know how close this film is to the book it's based on.
Huh. It's probably a book that some producer grabbed in an airplane, or in an airport right before getting on a plane, which is like, oh, this fucking book's crazy. We gotta do this.
Yeah, I was trying to find out more. I went on Goodreads, and there were a bunch of reviews for the novel, but the details were, like, so sparse. So, yeah, I had a really hard time. I was like, for a book to spawn a film, typically, at least in modern days, it has to be a pretty viral book. It needs to be pretty notably amazing or notably popular.
Yeah, it's not going to be like some pulp book that you just find in the back of a drugstore or something. I'm trying to think about places where you buy shitty books, and I can't think of it.
The dollar store? Either way, it inspired this film, and this film is insane. It was such a pleasant surprise. I'm gonna give up my cards right away, like I normally do. I had so much fun watching it. I didn't know anything about it putting it on, just the back cover, obviously, which I didn't read, so that's totally
okay.
Exaggerated.
Actually, so this is a great question. You're the one that pulled it out. You're like, oh my god, look at this. Tell me all about that cover. Exactly, like, what went through your mind when you saw it, and you're like, this is why we need to get this movie.
Well, it had the green horror sticker on it, and it was a clamshell case, and I'm quite partial to clamshells, so we bought it.
Okay.
That's really it.
I feel real confident about all the other movies we purchased.
Yeah, I got another one called Premonition or something, and it had
something like that.
It had another silly cover, but it was clamshell and had the horror sticker, and it had like the VHS rental store stamp on it, and yeah. I was like, yes, I need this.
That is pretty cool.
Look at that frosty snot guard. John hates when I call them snot guards, but that's what they are.
It's just gross. I don't like to think about the guy at the VHS store, or the girl, just hitting the Windex on the VHS tape and cleaning it. And then just putting it back on the shelf, and little me going, this one looks
great! You think
great.
They indexed it only if they got one that had, like, Cheeto fingers all over it? We gotta talk about this movie. We're completely, like, dancing around the film.
Got it. Jeff Fahey's playing Bill. Is he a criminal psychiatrist?
I don't know what he is.
He deals with
crazy murderers.
Yeah, he's...
That's something psychologist, but dealing with murderers. Sometimes. Because sometimes he's a professor.
Oh my god, I forgot that he was teaching a class, that's right.
And it's also, spoiler alert, the same school that the Black Christmas girls go to.
That's based on an assumption.
I saw that movie 2 weeks ago, and I saw this movie a week ago, and it's the same damn arch, John.
And the only filming location listed is Toronto.
Sorry, carry on your synopsis.
We know so little about what the fuck he does. All we really know is that he calls the people he talks to in these rooms patients. We know that much. And at some point, there was a microphone between him and a guy where he's like, tell me how it makes you feel.
Well, and he's got this big monologue at the beginning about how he wants to, like, his one goal in life is to cure one crazy evil dude because evil is something that you can cure or something. He just wants to prove that.
That's what I'm thinking,
right? And
that's
right? The big theme of the movie, you would think. No, it's not.
No,
it sure isn't.
No, because as soon as things start to go south a little bit for him, rather than going, I need to get to the bottom of this, he goes, we need to kill it with fire right now.
Fire and shotguns.
On his way to the office, he's dictating his entire day's schedule to his secretary, who I'm so glad she never got that tape.
I thought he was just talking into the tape.
You think it was himself? I thought he was talking to his secretary. I was like, hey, can you leave a note on my desk, really big, pick up garbage bags, big smile, right? So we know he's a good dad and a provider.
He hates his son, by the way.
I think he
hates... Did you get that weird vibe from that all those goodbye to his children in the morning scenes?
And then just like a smack on the head to
his
son.
He kisses his daughter on the mouth twice and then, yeah, just like fucking ruffles his son's hair and just... No.
I think at first he ignores him. He just steals a piece of toast from his plate. Like the most stereotypical, I'm late for work, I gotta go. Oh, a mug at the door? Thanks. This'll fit in my fucking cup holder.
It'll be great when I break fast and go through the windshield. I'll burn myself with coffee first.
So he's dictating into this cassette tape, like everything that needs to be done today, everything he can't possibly forget. And we see that the car ahead of him has a little wobbly wheel.
I thought it was his car the whole time, and then it
really
wasn't.
Oh, you thought he was just looking off into the
distance?
I'm like,
he's a really unobservant driver. If he doesn't realize his car is, like, wobbling the fuck out.
Well, regardless of whether it's his car or not, that guy ahead of him is definitely just drunk at the wheel or asleep. Because it's flying around inside... What's the wheel bearing? I don't know anything about cars.
The wheel
well? Wheel well. Is that... Yeah? That's what...
I don't know.
Okay.
Get on with it.
The tire flies off. He runs into that guy.
He flies through the windshield. Kablam.
Okay, sure. Yeah, some more stuff happens, but... I'm breaking this down like
Kablam.
Final Destination style. Yeah.
Kablam.
Kablam. But don't worry, no big deal. Doctor comes to his wife, we can save his arm. We have the technology. Kinda.
And she runs at her with a waiver and is like, you need to sign this right now. She's like, can we consult my husband? And the doctor is like,
most
no, you cannot.
Not.
So then we're in surgery, limb-sparing surgery.
This is my favorite part of the entire movie. I'm saying it right now, I'm putting a pin on it. There is nothing better in this movie than this scene.
This scene is weird because they, instead of filming this interestingly, just change the aspect ratio after the fact.
What are you talking about? It floats around a little bit, kind of like his drunk little head.
Hard to watch because the screen is pinched, but we're in an operating room. Dr. Webb, this crazy doctor who's sparing his limb by doing the transplant, has another patient in the operating room. Oh, by the way, which is lined with military men in scrubs in full, like, military garb with their guns and shit.
Oh, yeah. It's the best.
And there's some, like, high-tech computer system from 1987. Some guy who's, I assume he's alive at this point, and then
they... We never see his face, though.
They execute him, and then she cuts his head off, and then limb-saving surgery.
So weird. That's the first thing that they do. And the computer's updating as though it's getting real-time info. It's got a list of everything that needs to be cut off, and after she takes off his head, it just disappears from the scan.
And so Jeff Fahey, Bill, is a little bit conscious at this point, and he sees all of this. He's like, what's happening?
The anesthesiologist here is terrible at their job.
I think, honestly, anesthesiology is kind of a fucking guessing game.
I think so, too.
I don't want to say I don't think there's any science behind it, but I don't think there's any science behind it.
You know, I just realized that we need to be less confident in that. Surely to God, somebody's listening, and that's their job. It's just like two knobs, and it's just like, if you twist them, twist them all one way, they're dead. But if just a little bit at a time, everything's cool, both.
Not enough. Wake up mid-surgery. Panic attack.
And then if you're super lucky enough, you can be completely unresponsive, but fully fucking conscious. Do you think there's the two knobs is like, okay, this is like their conscious brain, and then this is like their motor function?
You can't compute the brain like that. No!
No, I mean, but I mean like chemically with stuff.
You can't turn off certain parts of the brain.
Okay.
No.
Because they just wouldn't fire back on.
What? What are we even talking about? No.
He gets his arm grafted on. It looks exactly the same, but it's covered in scars. Covered in scars.
Unnecessarily. So he's connected right at the top.
Yeah.
But there are slices, restitched slices, all the way down through his hand.
I don't know why.
Like, everywhere. She was feeding wires through him almost. She needed to access different parts of his body. Yeah. But you just need to connect nerves at the top.
What if it was a request from, like, him and his wife? Like, hey, Doc, you know, we're just going to tell people I was in a really bad car accident. We're not going to tell anybody I got a new arm. Could you maybe just, like, ugly it up so it really looks like I went through the windshield?
The skin tones would be different.
That's, okay, that is something they really should have done in this movie.
Yeah, they didn't do that.
He should have had, like, a really pale arm. This dude's been in jail. Did we say that it was a prisoner?
Yeah, that we said the military men.
It should be super pale because he wouldn't have seen any sunlight, right?
Or maybe it was just freckly. They should have done that.
Oh, he's freckles got one ginger arm? That's the evil arm right there, right?
Yeah, the arm hairs could have been a different color.
What if it was an albino? That wouldn't make a difference.
Maybe they did do that, and because we watched it on shitty VHS, we couldn't tell.
Oh. Well, that and Jeff A's wearing, like, 1,000 turtlenecks in this movie.
He is wearing 1,000 turtlenecks.
Can you imagine if he had a sleeveless turtleneck?
I thought the reveal at the end was going to be that he got the head transplant. And he
oh, my God!
And he wasn't dumb the whole time.
Are you... Oh, my God!
And that it was... What's his name's body?
That would have been incredible.
But, spoiler alert, that's not what happens. But the turtlenecks, don't you think that they were sort of alluding to something? They did not.
No, I think we were just paying too much attention to what he was wearing.
But they got bigger and bigger. At one point where he's, like, wrestling with his son, the turtleneck has completely unraveled, because I assume they were in, like, take 7. Mm-hmm. And the turtleneck is all the way up to his chin. It is turtleneck
it's
city.
There's a foot of turtleneck.
There is a foot of turtleneck. So he wakes up, arm working real good. We have a couple montages of him working out the arm. And he's,
just getting ripped, you know.
He's getting ready. He leaves the hospital. Life is grand. He's got two arms. His kids are like, ew. And he's like, it's okay. And then he starts having nightmares. And he keeps envisioning all these weird, dark things.
I think everybody knows pretty quickly, like, this is gonna be...
Sinister arm.
Yeah, visions, memories that this arm keeps. Like, this arm was responsible for so many deaths.
And the doctor's like, it's cool, everything's fine. And he's like, I don't know, I'm gonna look into this. Actually, no, back at work one day, he's talking to one of his prisoners that I guess he's treating.
Yeah, somebody he wants to cure, but kind of like talks to like he's an idiot.
And they find out they have the same tattoo and you only get them on death row. And he's never noticed this tattoo before.
Yeah.
So then he goes to his cop friend.
Well, also this guy freaks out. He's like, I don't want to fucking talk to you, man. I know. I don't know what the fuck's going on.
It was really dramatic.
That made no sense. It would have been better
if
it was...
Don't you think they would have been bros? He would have been like, man.
That's what I'm...
We would shop at the same store.
I was thinking like the guy whose arm... the guy who originally owned that arm. I thought...
Oh, and they did a cool hand. Handshake. Right?
Like muscle memory?
Yes! So then he goes...
You are writing a much better movie. I'm so sorry. Like,
Thank you.
Ending is incredible. That's genius. Because to me, I would have, like... They had the similar gang tattoo, and he recognized the arm. Like, that was my buddy's arm. Oh, I don't want to talk to you.
And then they're like the stonecutters.
Oh, jeez.
Finds a cop buddy, fingerprints himself, and then this rudimentary computer tells us that he's murdered, like, 20 people.
Yeah.
Sorry, the hand.
The hand.
Belongs to a serial killer named Charlie Fletcher. So his murder list is really insane, because it's like, murder, 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 arson, theft, whatever, murder.
And then he's in jail, and then he murders people.
Yeah.
I think he just murdered people in jail.
It's just weird.
Seems like this guy loves murdering.
It's just weird. It's a long saga of murdering. Normally, murdering either happens spree-wise, or somebody's been a serial killer for a really long time, and then you find out at the end, and there's one big trial with 100 different counts.
Damn.
All the dates on those trials should be the same, shouldn't they?
Unless the trial dates. I thought those were like when this actually happened.
I honestly don't know. That computer only had like enough room for 4 lines on the chart.
There isn't enough data. There's a sex scene as soon as he comes home with this new hand that is
really
way too
uncomfortable.
I
don't know who's into the fact that his hand is from another person.
His wife, apparently. Apparently both of them.
Yeah, but they're holding like uncomfortable eye contact the entire time. And their bodies are not close to each other, so you know only the one hand is touching her.
Oh man, it's weird.
It's just the space and the eye contact gets me. If it was romantic and they were like spooning and he put his arm around, but it's literally just they're facing each other and they're both on their own respective pillows.
Yeah.
And his hand just like goes under the blanket and over. And you're like, oh, we're going to bread loaf this? Okay. Yeah, they definitely haven't had sex since that youngest child was born, is my theory. And they were
you think all they needed to, like,
full pajama set. You are not expecting to have sex at the end of the night if you're buttoning up a pajama set. And you're a dude. Buttoned up, but like full collar pajama set.
Yeah, like when you start getting dressed for bed, it seems like there's just nothing there
anymore. The day is over.
Yeah. Like your dick has reached its expiration date.
Oh, should have had something else transplanted. Ba-doom-ching.
Yeah.
So, doctor's no help. He knows his arm is evil. He finds out who the other donors are.
Yeah.
And he goes to one of them. It's
Brad Dourif,
who's the voice of Chucky.
Yeah.
Who doesn't sound like Chucky at all in this. And I was really disappointed.
Oh, did you expect him to just sound like Chucky and everything?
I thought that was his normal voice.
Wow.
But it wasn't.
Okay.
He's a painter who, since having received his new arm, is an awesome painter and paints all these macabre, dark paintings when previously he was only painting boring, bland hotel room art.
He's the greatest character in this movie. He's the most...
The scene, maybe.
The scene's great. Like, how many scenes
does
he have?
Yeah, but he's like, no, I don't want to change the arm. Who cares if I see dark stuff? It's making me rich. And then he meets the other guy who had the leg transplant, who's a basketball player, and loves the legs at first, but then they start to do rogue things like pressing on the gas when they should be pressing on the brakes in his car.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they're hanging out at the bar like old chums. That I didn't get, because the one guy, like, he doesn't want, the arm's not evil.
Yeah, I didn't quite get that either.
And then they're just hanging out, like, bro.
Well, this is after his wife kicks him out, because...
He strangles her and punches his kid in the face.
Yeah, on two separate occasions, right? Yeah.
And then he moves into a hotel, just him and his answering machine, which he sets up. What's the message? I can't even remember.
I have no idea. It's only hi, you've reached Dr. New Arm, and I'm currently kicked out of my house, but I've made a new home.
No, but he says something like, I'm currently in limbo here at the whatever.
So passive. Like, how can you be passive-aggressive voicemail
I'm sure your wife is calling to maybe give you updates of the kids at school or whatever, and you're just
currently in limbo over here, Diane.
I don't live at home right now because my wife's a huge bitch. Beep!
I want a short film of him getting progressively more and more drunk throughout the night trying
just
to record that
voicemail. Just recording the answering
message.
Yeah. There's no mini fridge. Beep! What arm do I even pee with now? Beep! Does the hotel room have roaches if the roaches are dead? Beep! Okay.
So he's been kicked out of the house because he choked his wife, and he got into a bar fight with the guys.
Oh yeah, so that bar scene led into a bar fight.
Yeah, led into a bar fight, and the only cop in town shows up to break up the fight, because anytime we need the police, it is the same detective. By the way, when we first saw him, I thought he was just some private eye in some shit office. I didn't realize, like, he was a public servant. Kid with the legs is dead. I don't even remember how it happens. I think he just...
He calls him because his legs stop working. Remember, he comes home from the grocery store after the bar fight, and he's like, ugh.
Yeah, who goes to the grocery store after the bar?
Somebody who needs groceries. And his legs, like, collapse, but then he's calling Bill to be like, I don't know, man, I gotta go to the hospital or whatever. And then Bill hears a tussle over the phone, and he rushes to the guy's apartment, and boom, he's out the window, and he's dead, and his legs are missing.
That's Brad Dourif. Because while they're there, he's like, oh my god, we gotta go help my painter friend.
And boom, he's out the window and his arms
boom,
are missing.
Boom, he's out the fucking window. That is a great fucking scene, and I don't care about anything else in this movie. Brad Dourif is hanging from the window, and this motherfucker puts his foot on Brad Dourif and pulls his goddamn arm off.
And this motherfucker is some new guy who's wearing bandages all over his head, and there's a big, like, reveal, but we're like, we haven't seen him before.
Right, so two things happening here. One, when that kid's legs stopped working, was he commanding the legs? Was he just like, okay, and freeze?
Maybe.
Like, you're paralyzed now. You belong to me, obey my voice.
Like a magician.
Yeah. Why the fuck isn't Jeff Fahey the bad guy? We spend so much time setting up that he's got this new darkness that he's got to live with, and it's affecting his personal life. Why can't he be the one that's killing people? Even if he's sleepwalking while it's happening. I don't care.
I don't know. So, this masked guy, or I'm saying masked, but he's in bandages, is the serial killer Charlie Fletcher.
That they all got their body parts from.
And he's driving in his car with his new legs with his old legs and his arm that he's stolen from these other donor people.
In the backseat.
And he pulls up alongside Bill and the cop and handcuffs their hands together. Then there's the best, most surprisingly and sudden car chase I have ever seen. And it is my favorite thing about this movie. And you can't take it away from me because it's so damned great.
It is crazy.
Great idea. When he handcuffs their hands together in the two separate cars, you're like, holy fuck, he's getting the arm. But then they drive in tandem for like 6 minutes.
This would have been done so fast.
He should be trying really hard to go through dividers and turn in different directions, but they turn down different lanes and exit ramps and stuff together.
Yeah, when they finally do get to that divided highway spot and there is no choice, he's gonna lose his fucking arm. Jeff Fahey brilliantly pulls out the cop's gun, shoots the handcuff. I don't know why. I can understand not shooting that guy in the face. That's probably the smart move because then you definitely lose your arm.
Before that, though, there were multiple opportunities for him to just hop in what's-his-name's car. And I know it's up in the air, but at least you're not gonna lose your arm immediately.
To hop in that car, though,
was halfway in the car in some of those scenes. He was already in the car.
I suppose that's true. Like, what's a few more feet? But then you just be in his lap, like, because you're handcuffed to him and you're not gonna, like, crawl across the seat, right? You're just like, oh, hello there.
You can figure it out when you're not suddenly going to die. So that guy speeds off, and it's just the detective and Bill in the underpass. And the detective gets out with his gun, and he's going to shoot him. And then Bill just steals his car and chases off after him. And you assume he's chasing him, but no. He pulls to the side of the road and starts writing a journal to his wife.
This is my final journal entry. Like, you've been keeping a journal?
It's the first page of the journal. And he's like, leaving it for his wife. And then he puts it in an unmarked envelope and puts it in a mailbox.
Yeah.
And there's no stamp. There's
no
address on it.
Nope. In fact, if you really pay attention, when he licks it and tries to close it, because they've probably done this scene so many times, there's no adhesion left in it either. It just flops open and he drops it in the box.
Why didn't he record with his tape recorder?
Yeah. That would have made a lot
more
sense. They
set that up at the beginning.
Yeah. He seems to be a tape recorder man.
But he writes in his... So he stole a police officer's car to turn down some residential street and write a letter to his wife.
Doesn't make sense. Because this guy crashes, like, a few hundred meters away. Had he have just gone down the street and hung a left, that motherfucker would still be... I don't know why I keep referring to him as the motherfucker, but that's his name.
That scene, though, where he's walking away from the car and he's carting all of his body parts...
That's the best.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah, imagine a cool guy's don't look like an explosion scene, but underneath each arm is like two legs and another arm. Oh, it's great.
And his face is in bandages and the car's in fire in the background. It was awesome.
They're not even convincing bandages, right? He just looks like he has a bad toothache, like a cartoon toothache.
It does look like a cartoon toothache.
But, you know, we learn soon enough, and to be perfectly honest, I think most of the audience has figured out this is Charlie Fletcher. Again, I know.
But
not been revealed yet.
On, I don't know. And should we not have seen him more? Maybe they should have showed on his face during the surgery a little bit better, because when we finally saw him in Brad Dourif's apartment, I was like, who's this guy?
You know what they should have? Just a quick scene right before he kills somebody where he pulls out his arm. We see on his wrist no tattoo, but in black pen he writes Striker, like he used to have on his arm.
Ooh.
Then we would immediately know who this guy is, right? And like, we could still do like POV shots. And...
So we end up at the hospital for the final showdown. Bill shows up with the cop car. I don't know why he goes to the hospital.
I don't really know why he goes to the hospital either. He figures it out.
He just knows. Maybe the arm is calling to him. But then we find out that Dr. Webb has been in it all along for some reason.
Yeah, they meet him, fully prepped for surgery. Like, hello, Bill. We're ready to take that arm now if you still don't want it.
And there's a whole bunch of animated body parts in the background. Like a torso.
Yeah, the torso.
With a pee bag.
Oh, that pee bag's full.
And they're all just jiggling in the background.
Well, to show that they're still alive.
Waiting for a host. I assume they're trying to reanimate Charlie.
Yeah. As like a Frankenstein.
We're given no reason why.
Nope.
We don't know who the doctor is. John and I assumed that she was his mother.
I think a lot of people online assume it was his mother.
There's no... She doesn't even have a big monologue at the end as to why she's doing it.
Maybe that's
and
why.
And also why the body parts needed to be on people anyways. Because she's obviously able to animate them on their own. They're in a cabinet in the back of the room. So why do they need donors? Like, what?
She could have gotten away with just one experimental donor taking one limb. Oh, you know why? This is how it works. I get it. This is...
Wouldn't it have been easier to just break Charlie out of the hospital before they executed
That's
him?
That's what I'm saying. This is the most complicated breaking out of prison story. Because dying does not kill you.
They broke him out of the hospital in parts?
Yes.
Oh.
It's like stealing a car one piece at a time from the factory, right? It totally works. That's what they're doing. They need to go back and get his body parts and attach them so he can live again. That's genius. But I don't think tearing somebody's arm off and then running across town to get it surgically put back on is gonna work.
I don't think so either.
I don't think you could cut off your own arm.
It wasn't a fire. Whatever. This is a universe where that kind of surgery exists and works.
That's true. We just gotta believe it.
So Bill saves the day by grabbing a shotgun and he shoots.
Just blasting some holes through
the
torso.
He shoots everybody.
Yeah, he shoots
including
everybody.
The torso. Just to make damn hell sure it's not coming back.
Could have just unplugged it, right? Like, could have just immediately unplugged it from the wall. It would have gone.
Oh, man, that would have been great. Like,
I guess I just
plug,
assumed...
But on just body parts. And then, like, the breather thing just goes...
For one last time. Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
This had the potential to be an incredible
what
update.
What are you talking about? It is incredible. Final scene, I just want to get to it. He's writing another friggin' journal entry against a tree and his wife's there and he's just, I wrote down part of the speech for you, John.
Oh, fantastic.
Because it's fucking absurd.
It's all over the place.
Where does evil live? Does it live in the flesh? If a tree falls in the forest and nobody is there to hear it, does it make a sound?
What is
his diatribe even?
And she's like, oh, you're planning on publishing that in like the John Hopkins Medical Journal or something? And they would never publish this shit.
And he's just like,
ever.
The arm's not evil anymore and I want it fair and square,
it's
Doc.
It's mine now, Chuck. Yeah. And she's like, you're gonna keep that in there?
And they end on such a weird note because he kind of like sasses her.
Yeah.
And then the credits just silently roll over them sitting there, also in a weird aspect ratio. And it's uncomfortable because you're like, is he still supposed to be evil? And we're supposed to get that because he was mean to his wife?
I think so. I think a part of Chuck still lives in him, is the idea.
The whole movie is like the handle of the axe theory, which...
Yeah, exactly. So if you...
The fact that he kills what's-his-name's head and now the arm just belongs to him now, I just don't get it. And also, he didn't cure evil at all. He just killed it. The theme set up in the beginning
of the movie...
He just
wants to save one person, Kim.
It was himself! He saved himself!
And he didn't even do a good job because he's a piece of shit by the end of the movie, right?
Oh, man.
I just want to kill one person and get away with it. That would have been better to open the film with that, like... Honey, I don't know how to explain this to you, but I'm in the prison all day, and I just want to kill one person without having to go to jail. I've lived with this in my entire life, and I can't do it. I love you and the kids too much. I won't do that to you, but I need this. Like, that would have been a weird movie. One missed opportunity in this movie before we go. He totally should have punched that guy in the face. Whether it, like, knocks his, the bad guy, the big baddie, Chuck, whatever his name is. Lester.
Oh, with his own arm?
Yeah, he should have punched it with his own arm. I don't care whether...
Oh, and he could have just been like, it's my arm now, Chuck.
No, not even. Like, he could have pulled back and said, need a hand, and then just bam!
Boom!
Knocked his head off his shoulders. That would have been great.
Yeah, but they should have cast Jean-Claude Van Damme in the role. So, your rating on the film...
I haven't even thought about rating this movie.
I already rated this movie on Letterboxd.
Oh, did you?
First I rated it, and then I was like, oh no, that's too low, and I raised it up. And then when I woke up the next morning, I dropped it back down. I had a really hard time. I thoroughly enjoyed this film, but it's awful. So I'll go first. I'm going to give it a 2 out of 4.
Yeah, I can't not give it a 2 out of 4. 1.5 is so low. Because I think anything below 2 is just like, guys, what the fuck were you doing? Like, everybody tried in this movie. They did a great job.
Oh, no, this movie was terrible. But it was so watchable.
Yeah.
And enjoyable. And I had so much fun trying to decipher the decisions made and the directions the plot took. I loved it.
It's a nonsense thriller.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And moving on, let's talk about David Cronenberg's Rabbit.
All around her, people are dying, and only Rose knows why.
You gotta come quick and get me. It's Rose. It's gotta be. Something's happened to Rose.
Health officials have said they consider the outbreak of the new strain of rabies as being potentially the worst of this century.
You can't trust your mother. Your best friend. The neighbor next door. One minute, they're perfectly normal. The next, rabid. Pray it doesn't happen to you. Rabid.
From 1977, currently sitting at a 6.4 out of 10 on IMDb, a 68% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 3.2 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
So a lot like Body Parts, Rabid starts with Rose and Hart. They're on, I guess, a cross-Canada motorcycle trip?
I don't know. I think they're just on a motorcycle.
All right, they're just spending the weekend on a motorcycle. They get into a huge accident. Luckily, it's just across the street from a plastic surgery resort, and they rush her in for emergency surgery. Because the closest competent hospital is 3 hours away. He said competent, right? Or no, he said the closest serious hospital.
Yeah, and so this plastic surgery resort is strange. They have an ambulance, a weird-looking green ambulance, and then two patients who discover the car accident across the lane or whatever. And they're present for when they bring in, I guess, the new patients.
Well, I don't think they're supposed to be bringing people into emergency, right?
I know, but it's just so awkward. They're just standing there on camera.
Is that woman in distress? Are they taking her in for surgery? They could have at least put a sheet over her or something. That's a direct quote.
But yeah, so she needs to be rushed into emergency surgery because she's got serious burns and injuries. Hart's cool, though. He's only got a broken arm.
Yeah, he's totally fine. Well, she got pinned underneath the motorcycle, right? And then it exploded. I don't really think that skin grafts are emergency surgery. I think you can kind of get a skin graft done after.
Yeah, because skin grafts, right, are done by a plastic surgeon, yeah, after the major surgery is done, you know, like stop internal bleeding and
which they do not know. I guess we just assume they do it. Like, yeah, that's the boring stuff. Let's get to the cool shit.
Get to the fun shit where we talk about skin grafts and medical terminology because we researched it.
I don't even know if they did. Either that
they
or
did. The stuff was correct, but it was unnecessary for us to, well, no, like the pseudoscience behind it is not correct, but they used the right terminology.
Okay, got it. Okay, so if I remember correctly, it's that they are doing an experimental skin graft with skin from her thigh, because thigh skin is neutral skin and can be used anywhere and will become cheek skin, as though there is a difference between skins.
No.
No? I swear that's what he was saying.
No, there
isn't. Oh, okay.
It's just skin.
Yeah.
Skin cells are skin cells.
Kind of nonsense.
The same as, like, fat cells are fat cells, and why women are having fat injected into their butts from other areas of their body. It's all cells.
Exactly. There is something really interesting about David Cronenberg's clinical gore, in the sense that with a slasher, you might see a wound, and then you'd see a weapon, and there'd be chaos. In his movies, there is a wound that we are definitely seeing, and the instrument is being put down, and it's bloodied, but it's still medical. It's just on top of a clean sheet in a sterile room instead of in the woods or in an abandoned apartment or something. And I don't know, it's on paper, beat for beat, it's exactly the same as a horror movie that you would see at a grindhouse theater, but because it has a completely different score and a different setting, it's suddenly not as grotesque. I think he's really interested in that, the dichotomy between the two of those, right?
Yeah, I honestly think he just has a clinical fascination.
I think so too.
And like his stuff I would classify as medical sci-fi in almost 100% of the cases.
Yeah, at least for like the 80s.
It's all body involving. And this movie is weird.
Yeah, like, there's also no real reason for the movie to take place largely at this plastic surgery resort. I think he just loves the idea of people constantly going in and out to fix their nose 3 times in a row,
yeah,
until it looks
right.
That's
got a really interesting universe about it, but you don't get to see a whole lot of it. I thought the film was going to take place entirely at this facility because it's very isolated, but a month later, we find out Rose is in a coma and she secretly wakes up from it, but she keeps sneaking out. So she kills, well, not kills, she
sucks the blood. Courts.
She courts one of the night guard or one
of
the patients.
I think he's one of the patients, yeah.
He was at a desk at night. night. I assumed he was the night guard.
Maybe they're not allowed to smoke in your room. Like, he got out of his room just to go smoke at the desk.
It was weird. So, we didn't mention that the lead in this is, like, an iconic porn star.
She's iconic?
I think so.
All right. What else? What is she in?
Porn, John. Porn from the 70s.
List off some titles that I'd know. Come on.
I don't know. Backdoor Broads. Right. I made that up. Well, I didn't make it up. I'm sure it exists. But so she's naked a lot of this movie.
Needlessly, yeah.
She wakes up from her coma. She's naked in her bed. And then she's like, I'm cold. And then the guy's like, this is weird. And then he starts bleeding from the armpit.
He's like, hey, baby, you got a knife in there? What's going on? But he still doesn't want to stop hugging her.
I think he's pinned.
Well, I think so, too. So we don't necessarily know what's going on. We just know that something's up with Rose. I think this is the only scene in the movie where it makes sense that she's naked. Simply because that's why he gets close.
And then there are like 8 more scenes though where she's just in a closet picking out her outfit for the day and she's completely topless. And there's a few of those.
There are a few. She leaves at one point and we assume to escape the hospital. Like she's woken up, maybe she doesn't know where she is and she's frightened, so she takes off. No, she's just going to a barn.
To eat a cow.
And then also
a farmer.
Oh no, she doesn't even eat the farmer.
No, she drinks the farmer.
No, she doesn't. He's like, oh, hey baby, you thirsty? I got something for you to drink. Like, he's getting all nasty. Obviously, he's gonna rape her in the barn, right? But instead of incapacitating him and drinking his blood, she just pulls her poker out. I mean, like, none of this is, like, directly on screen. We're just supposed to get it. The poker comes out, and she jams his eyeball into it, like a knife.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And then takes off.
That thing in her armpit is kind of disgusting.
Yeah.
And I don't quite understand the metaphor behind it because it's definitely phallic. I'm going to say phallic.
Sure.
And it's got a needle on the end of it and it comes out of like a butthole.
Do you think that this movie, whether he knew it or not, is David Cronenberg writing about his relationships? And it's like, seems like every time I fucking sleep with somebody, they just go crazy.
What? Oh, okay, well, I think it's an interesting choice that they cast a porn star in the lead, and it's about a woman injuring and causing this riot with something phallic. And especially for it coming out in the 70s, like, the context I get is that the uprising of women is, or women wearing pants in the world is, like, ruining, or society can't handle it.
It's creating hysteria.
Yeah, because it turns into this almost zombie movie, and it felt very Soylent Green-y at the end.
Well, yeah, definitely, because they've got dumpster trucks picking up people and bodies off the street to just take away.
But the whole time I was trying to catch the metaphor, because the movie is very slow, and it's a little repetitive. To be honest, there's a lot of scenes of her, yeah, injuring people. She escapes, she hitchhikes with a truck driver, she tries to eat a burger, she realizes she can't eat a burger, so she eats the truck driver. And then she goes to her friend / sister's house.
But at this point, when she's staying with her friend in Montreal, everybody that she's infecting has, everybody that she's drinking from is now infected with some sort of crazy form of rabies. And they're infecting other people, and they're infecting 3 more people, and it's just become an epidemic, and the city is under quarantine.
Yeah, they basically go from it's isolated to this plastic surgeon office to it's martial law now.
Right? Yeah, and they say that, like, the prime minister doesn't have anything to say about the incident, but we are under martial law now. You don't have anything to say, but you're willing to say the military is controlling the city now? That's weird. Okay, but that puts a real damper on her trying to go get groceries, in quotations, because every time she tries to drink some dude at the mall, all of a sudden, people are getting shot, there's chaos, Santa's dead.
She goes to a smutty cinema, and there's this really long scene about how cool she is in the cinema with this creepy guy, and then she drinks him, and we're like, yeah, been there, done that. You get it, she's a porn star. And then, finally, her friend is like, you can't leave, everybody out there is infected and crazy and evil, so she has no choice but to eat her friend.
Unfortunately.
And then, and that's right when Hart breaks in, who's been running after her the entire movie, but really ineffectively.
For no reason. It's like, hey, she's recovering from surgery. She called me. She sounded panicked, and now I can't find her. But despite the fact that the apocalypse is going on, he's gonna keep hunting this girl down.
Yeah, and he ends up back in the city where I guess she is, and we find out just how bad things have gotten. That's when we find out about the dump trucks, and there's like sharpshooters on them, and they basically shoot at anybody who's infected.
Oh yeah, and everybody needs to have their vaccine and
their vaccine card.
Yeah, right, you gotta show your papers. And there's a bit of a scuffle between them. I actually thought that he was dead when she left him.
I thought he was dead, too.
He took a bad tumble
down
those
stairs. She basically pushes him down the stairs. And then she kisses him on the head and then grabs another dude and locks herself in a room with him. And
but calls him.
Yeah, and so this is film logic here. He wakes up from being passed out in the stairwell, goes to the friend's apartment, and picks up the phone that's ringing. She's just assuming that he's going to wake up and then go back in the apartment. If I were him, I would have run down the stairs, not up them.
Looking for her, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I know we watched this movie yesterday, but I'm pretty sure what happens in that conversation is, I've been thinking a lot about what you said, and yes, this is all my fault, and things would be better without me? Is that one of those conversations?
No! She doesn't believe that she's patient zero. So she bites this guy she meets in the lobby and then locks herself in one of the apartments with him.
Yeah.
To prove that he's not going to turn into one of those rabid things and that she's perfectly fine.
Oh.
But while she's on the phone with him, this guy turns rabid and then he eats her. She's patient zero. But the cool thing is she doesn't go rabid and she's dead at the end and the dumpster just picks her up and dumps her in the back of it. And she could be immune. She could be...
Well, the cure would lie with her, but she gets picked up like anybody else.
But she never went rabid.
I think my brain just left
my
head.
So we just trusted the women to wear the pants. Society would go back to normal.
I guess I stopped paying attention, because at some point I clued in when, you know, Christopher Walken, not Christopher Walken.
Oh, he is not Christopher Walken, but he is Christopher Walken.
Yeah, no, David Cronenberg has a type. He's, like, screaming into the phone, like, it's suicide! You're committing suicide! Like, I really thought that she was doing it herself.
That phone scene is the most emotion we saw from him the entire film.
Not her. She was just as stiff as a board.
Yeah, her acting was... You could see her being coached off camera, because there were scenes where she was, like, really sad, and she was really afraid.
And then,
she had these really weird eyes. And they were really open, and they were reacting to things like somebody falling down the stairs, and the emotion should have been horror, but it was like, watching. I am watching this.
She might have been looking at cue cards for all we know.
I don't know. She is an interesting woman.
In terms of ideas for the movie and, like, what's inspiring it, I think... There's a scene at the beginning where they're talking about surgery and wounds. The way you would maybe hear, like, your relatives talk about around a dinner table. Like, oh, yeah, you know, ever since I broke my shoulder, like, it always hurts right before it rains. Stuff like that. Like, oh, it's just something you're going to have to get used to. I think that's where the movie's coming from. I went into surgery and now I hurt every time X happens.
Yeah.
He's trying to show a more extreme version of that.
Well, and I thought it was going to be, too, something about the dangers of elective surgery, but her surgery isn't elective at all.
That's
She's
the other
kind
weird
of
thing,
been
right?
under the wing of a crazy doctor.
Maybe that's the thing, right? It's the doctors. It's not necessarily the people that want the surgery. Of course you want a new nose. Everybody wants a better nose. But you can't let these doctors just do whatever they want, because at one point they'll go too far.
Yeah. One scene I really wanted to talk about that we kind of blazed on through, before she escapes the plastic surgery clinic, she goes into the whirlpool room.
Okay.
And there's a woman there, and she's trying to, like, seduce her in the way that only Marilyn Chambers can. And she eats this woman, and then she disappears. She escapes the thing. She goes on her hitchhiking trip. When the cops are involved at the end, and Hart finally makes it back to the facility, he's like, did you see a young girl? And the cop's like, oh, yeah, we got one downstairs. And he's like, well, what's her name? Did you get her name? He's like, didn't get her name, though.
No, didn't get her name.
And then there's this big shocking reveal scene where he opens up a freezer and there's that woman frozen like an ice cube. And Hart is just like, what?
Yeah, he's like, this is the girl? And you're like, no! Why did you show this to me?
What kind of cop just... What? Why would you?
His delivery, too, is great. Like, he looks like he's tired. He's got his hand on the wall. And it's like he only comes to life when this guy comes in the room. Like, yeah, what do you want, man? Yeah, sure. I can show you this girl downstairs. Let's fucking do it.
Oh, man.
He was a weirdo.
Yeah. That was my favorite scene, though. That was completely out of line.
So that's part of what I think was informing the horror part of it. But I also think the end half of the movie, where we become like the crazies and there's this sort of government paranoia that's coming around, like the FLQ crisis. Do you remember that?
Mm-mm.
For anybody outside of Canada, a extremist group was kidnapping and murdering politicians. And Pierre Trudeau, Justin Trudeau's dad, declared martial law and the military took over.
In Canada?
In Canada? How do you not know about this?
I don't know.
It was insane! Yeah!
Was I alive for this?
No.
Well, then. Guess neither, I don't care.
Neither was I, but I went to a history class in high school.
I actually didn't.
Either way, yeah, what you see in this movie is kind of what already happened in Montreal and Quebec already, to a degree. I mean, like, we weren't shooting people in the streets and stuff, but people were really scared for a while. So I think that's probably what he's tapping into, at least a little bit, in this movie.
Do you think that French people were really going to appreciate and watch this movie, though? Because there's only one person with a French accent in the entire movie. I didn't realize it was in Montreal until somebody said it halfway through the movie.
It seems like the entire movie takes place within the French-speaking areas of Canada, and no one speaks French yet.
Yeah, and especially rural Quebec is not English-speaking.
Not at all.
And they're in rural Quebec for a very long time.
La vache. Is vache cow? Is that? Yeah, okay, I'm not sure. Or that's milk.
No, that's idea. Lay.
My mistake. So the lay of
du
the vache.
Oh,
this has been your French lesson from a village idiot.
But yeah, things about this movie, it was definitely one of his early works. It is... Oh, we didn't talk about Hart had a companion the entire film who
the
neither
biggest nose
of us could figure out what he actually did. We think he worked for the facility.
I thought he was one of the doctors.
But
at first.
I don't know. And
now
then
I think he's a business partner?
Or he's a friend
a
of
very
Hart's?
Vague business partner. He is also a friend of Hart's. That's the other weird
because
thing.
Because he's riding around with Hart almost the entire movie, and this guy's got a baby, and when he finally goes back home, his wife is like eating the baby and
oh,
then eats him.
It's totally great. Like, we don't see any of that, but there's this little change table that you can also
like
bathe.
A bathing table?
Yeah,
and
it's got a little hose.
Blood.
Oh, it's great, right?
I wanted to see that baby be rabid, though.
Well, so did I, but I don't think they had the budget, Kim.
Yeah, well, they did have quite a few car crashes, though. They could have saved a car and bought a baby puppet.
This was an ambitious project, you're right. Goddamn.
Yeah, I don't know what else to say. There's a part in the movie where you can see the cameraman.
Yes.
Like,
yes, there
for
is.
For about 35 to 40 seconds.
There's a rabid dude just, like, spraying a bunch of rabid juice and saliva all over Hart's windshield, and then they shoot him off and delouse the car, and they're like, all right, you're good to go.
But in the back seat is a full-out cameraman with a camera.
Yeah.
They only had enough time, I guess, or resources to do one two-camera take. They had a camera outside the car and a camera inside the car, and they didn't redo any of the shots with the camera guy inside the car, outside the car.
No, we gotta go. We're losing light, guys.
It was nighttime.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Oh.
I think it's a 28 Days Later situation. They only had enough street time to do those shots. They're like, well, we're fucked. Plus, this is an era of dailies, right? They probably only had the one day to shoot in there. They got the dailies back from the processing facility, and they're like, fuck, he's in the back seat. Like, well, hopefully nobody sees it, because we can literally afford nothing else.
Yeah, and they're like, well, hopefully all the goo on the windows will obstruct it. And then 20 years later, we're like, HD DVD!
They're like, oh, fuck.
This movie, I will say, had a more coherent and deeper plot than the first film. I have no idea what the first film was trying to tell me. It was just entertaining.
Nope. Yep.
This one was kind of slow.
I could have used some entertaining moments.
But I thought the use of a porn star as your leading lady was very progressive, especially giving her a penis in her armpit.
Yep.
I don't know what he was trying to tell me about that, but I feel like it was a progressive choice, except for the fact that she gets dressed several times in this movie. I'm still trying to figure out what it all means. I'm still trying to unpack the undertones of this. Do you know what it means? Is it supposed to mean anything, or is it just supposed to be shocking that she's got this weird thing in her armpit? It has to be a message on something. I'm going to stick with the fact that it's about women in society taking men's jobs and taking men's positions and getting equal rights, and it being a push on society.
Yeah, I don't know if I see any of that in the movie.
Well, it's a metaphor. It's
It's
society turning into, like, rabid animals.
Yeah, I think it might just be more about the dangers of tampering with the human body and the human genome well before its time.
Yeah, but then shouldn't it have just happened to one of the patients at the facility? Like, the fact that it happens to somebody who's not electing to do it makes me think that it's a bigger commentary, and it's not about surgery or body horror, or that's just
point.
The venue to tell the story. If it was one of those older couples and it was her sixth ear surgery and then all of a sudden she gets something growing out of her ear, that would make sense to me, that it's about not loving what God gave you kind of thing, and science advancing too far and we shouldn't touch things that don't need to be touched. But this, I think, is just gotta be a commentary.
I'm not sure. Definitely a young filmmaker, so probably. Yeah, probably. But,
so what's your rating?
My rating, unfortunately, is probably closer to like a 1.5.
I'm also going to go with a 1.5.
Yeah.
It felt very long.
It did. It's an older movie, though. You know, like, I would love to see David Cronenberg from 1986 remake that movie.
Yeah.
I think it was just too much for him to tackle at the time, but...
It just felt a little repetitive. We learned about the stinger, and then we watched her kind of seduce these creepy guys over and over and over again while we were telling this bigger story about this epidemic. And I felt it either needed to be an isolated movie where she was like a slasher villain in this plastic surgery facility,
yep,
or we went to the epidemic after she started it.
I would also have liked to see it a little more contained. We could still have that epidemic because it's just a resort. If somebody gets really sick, they have to go to the hospital, which does happen in this. And, you know, maybe instead, the end of the movie, we see, like, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. He gets onto an airplane and he goes to a different country and now it's going fucking worldwide.
There you go. Now it's a series. You got your movie inciting a series and it becomes The Walking Dead, and then there's several hundred seasons of it.
See, there's the problem in the late 70s. You guys weren't thinking about franchise opportunities. And also, where's the toy tie-in
in
this?
Yeah, I was like, how can you merchandise a phallic armpit?
Nobody's gonna buy a Barbie where if you raise its arm, a dick comes out.
That's great!
No, even better. It's Pez. You lift the arm and candy comes out.
Yes.
That's it.
And it's got like a sharp on it.
It puts out Pez, but they only come in the shapes of knives.
I love it. And the doll doesn't come with a shirt.
Yeah, the shirt can be made if you borrow it from another Barbie.
Well, sounds like Body Parts wins, even though it wasn't a better movie.
How did that happen, right?
But we want to hear your opinions. Hopefully you caught both these movies. Head on over to our Twitter page, at NOFS Podcast, and vote on our poll whether you liked Body Parts or Rabid more.
Also, before we go, I have a quick little game that I've put together regarding body horror and real-life body horror. We're going to be posting it on our Patreon page at patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet. If you'd like to hear that game or check out all the other bonus content available to you as a patron of this podcast, head to www.patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive. Just long enough to tell the tale of the Nightmare on Film Street. Ow! Help us grow the horde. Leave a review on iTunes or wherever you subscribe. Continue this week's conversation on Twitter by following at NOFS Podcast. And as always, more terror can be found lurking on our website, www.nightmareonfilmstreetpodcast.com. Until next week, stay creepy, fiends.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% Lean Ground Sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.